The December 20th, 2013 rain report is coming up in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the icy confines of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this rain report. Hopefully many newly licensed hams will be finding something of merit under their Christmas trees this year. How many of these new ham recruits took what has been termed a ham cram class? Hard to say. However, one ham who reportedly teaches a successful one-day ham cram technician class is Dan Romanchik, KB6NU. Dan spoke about his teaching technique at the 2013 Dayton Hamvention.
We got started teaching one-day classes about 5 years ago when the guy who was teaching a more traditional class decided he didn't want to do it anymore. I picked up the ball. I had been teaching some general class courses, and I said, well, I'll add the technician class to my repertoire. Because time is tight, I said, well, let's try the one-day tech class. You know, I'd read some things about it. There's some guy in California who had some ideas about it. He's got some stuff on his website. I said, well, I'll try it. It really worked pretty well. So we've been doing it now for 5 years. But what I'd like to do now is just tell you some things I've been doing to make these classes successful. And we are pretty successful. I live in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and not really a big town, but we do pretty well. We hold the class about 3 times a year. I just did the last session 3 weeks ago, and I had 19 students. And I had actually more sign up, but they didn't. Some of them, there's always some that don't show up, right? So I had 19 students, 18 passed the test. One failed it by one question. She took it again, but then she failed by 3 questions. So that was her best shot at it, I think. We'll get into that a little bit later. So the first thing is, how do you get people to show up? I have a number of different ways I publicize this. I publicize it through the museum. It's the Ann Arbor Hands-On Museum. We do have a radio station there, too. We hand out flyers and stuff there. Next thing I do is I send out emails to all the local clubs, any of the clubs within a 25 to 50 mile radius. I send them emails. I tell them when I'm going to do it. They put it in their club bulletins, and I get some students that way. I tell our section manager, and he puts it in his letter to the section. I tell the affiliated club coordinator. He sends out something too. And of course, then there's the AIRRL Find a Class thing on the website. If you don't know about that, you should take advantage of that. That's garnered some students. And then I get a notice into the local newspapers and magazines. We don't really have a newspaper in Ann Arbor anymore. It's an online thing. But that actually, in a way, works to my advantage because it's very easy to get an event posted there, whereas it might have been harder to get an event put in the newspaper calendar. So all these things, really, really, I do them every time I do it. I also keep an email list. So anybody that's ever expressed an interest in taking a class, I keep a spreadsheet of those folks, and they get my email when I'm going to do the next class. A lot of them have been on the list now for 2 years, and I don't think I'll ever hear from them again. But some of them, even a year or two later, they'll get my email, say, oh yeah, I can do it this time, and they'll show up. So that's another way I do it, because you never know where you're going to find somebody else. Where to hold it? And in my case, I have it easy. We do it at the Hands-On Museum. The museum people fall over backwards. I'm really lucky. They fall over backwards. They have me do it there. One time I mentioned doing a class somewhere else, and the executive director there almost had a heart attack. He says, no, we want you to do it here at the museum. But there's lots of other places. Wherever your club might happen to meet, maybe it's a church, maybe it's a Red Cross chapter, public library. These are all possible venues. I've also taught in township halls, just the wide range of places you can do it. And so, you know, be a little creative. You got a place, publicize it, getting people to show up. What's the next thing? What kind of study guide do you use? A lot of people use the AIRRL study guide, and that's okay. What I use, however, is my own study guide. I wrote my own study guide, and it's available in ebook form. It's available for free off my website in PDF form. My website, by the way, is kb6nu.com. I've been doing this for, well, at least 5 years now. I've had thousands of downloads, so I'm happy to say I've helped thousands of people get their licenses. It's about 45 pages. I call it the no-nonsense study guide. It really is no nonsense. What I did was I took every question in the study pool, reworded it as statements, reorganized the statements so that appropriate questions are next to one another, and then added some text for context so that it reads like a manual. We use this in our class. I actually started writing this before I started the classes, and fortunately, the two dovetail really nicely. This gets to the question. questions right away. And when we teach the classes, we're pounding the questions into people, basically. That's why they call it a ham cram, to two really work together well. The Boy Scouts actually adopted this study guide for the Jamboree, for teaching the classes at the National Jamboree. That gives you an idea how useful it might be for you. Okay, so then teaching the class. I get started at 9 o'clock. We used to get started at 8:30, but the museum people didn't like to get in before 9 o'clock. We start right at 9 o'clock. I don't wait for stragglers. We got a lot of material to cover. We cover the whole study guide in 6.5 hours. We want to get done by 3:30. Right at 3:30, the volunteer examiner team comes in, and we give them the test. We do it that way so they don't forget anything. We want to keep everything fresh in their minds. And 6.5 hours is just about enough time to get through all the material. That leaves time for questions. And I tell people to read through the manual a couple of times, take some practice tests, figure out what questions you have about the material, and then we can address those in class. I don't necessarily want to spend a lot of time on certain things, but I do want to answer the questions too. I just don't want to leave them hanging on things. So I tell them to at least read through the study guide a couple of times and take some online practice tests. In the emails to them, I used to say, your chances will be greatly improved if you do this. That didn't work as well as I'd hoped. So I've changed the wording now. I say, if you do not do this, chances are you will fail the test. And that's true, too. The one woman that failed 3 weeks ago, it's because she said this. She said, well, I read it, but that was 2 weeks ago. There's no way. So, in a way, the one day, saying it's a one-day class is a misnomer because you can't really do it all in one day. I mean, you can do it if they prepare for it. So I think that's the key. They really have to prepare for it.
You're listening to a talk from the 2013 Dayton Hamvention featuring Dan Romanchik, KB6NU, a ham who teaches one of those ham cram classes. Is this approach to ham radio classes simply an exercise in memorizing Q&A? We'll hear his thoughts about that when we come back. This is the Rain Report, heard in Chicago on the only 220 Saturday night net, the Midwest 220 megahertz net on the Chicago FM Club 224.10 repeater at 8 p.m.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
We get a little criticism once in a while about it. People say, oh, you're just teaching them the answers to the questions. And I have to kind of agree, yes, we are. But my philosophy on this is get them their license, let them start doing stuff. What a lot of people learn by doing, how can you best do stuff if you don't have a license? Getting them doing stuff, that's the best way, in my opinion. If anybody wants to debate that later, they can see me later. When I do the class, I don't use PowerPoint in classes. I think PowerPoints generally put people to sleep. I like to engage with them. I look at them so I can tell if they're falling asleep or not. I can tell if they're worth trying to keep awake or not. You know, one guy, he was falling asleep, and I kind of knew him previously, you know, as an acquaintance of mine. And I just had the feeling that I wasn't going to get to this guy that day. So instead of trying to keep this guy awake, I tried to keep other people awake. I let him basically sleep through the class. And of course, he failed the test. The point was, I was engaging with people. We had two kids one time, two brothers. They were about like 12 and 11. They were kind of funny too, because when I taught the part on Ohm's law, I said, well, okay, the basic equation is E equals IR. And if you use a little algebra, you can get these other two. And the kids go, oh, but we haven't had algebra yet. So I paid special attention to those kids, and they passed the test. My point here is I don't use slides because I don't want to read slides. I want to engage with the people. I wrote the study guide, and so just engaging is an important part. I tell stories. The test is big on preventing RFI, right? So there's a couple questions in there about using ferrite chokes. So the story I always tell about that is when I first put up a 40-meter dipole several years ago, I put the antenna analyzer on, and it was tuned up really great. I was ready to go. My wife runs downstairs. She says, what are you doing? I said, what? I just put up an antenna. She says, you're opening the garage door. It was true. I was opening one of our garage doors. And so the point of that story was, what did I do? I put a ferrite core up by the controller, and that cured the problem. I'm able to take some questions from the test, add my own personal experience, and that pays off. I've had pretty good success. I'd say I'm almost at a 90% pass rate. I'm much higher than that if you don't count the people that didn't really study. I think the next step for us is to add some follow-up classes that would turn people with licenses into hams, if you know what I mean. We haven't done quite so good a job on that yet, but there are people, you know, some of my students have extra class licenses now. So, you know, I get criticized once in a while, oh, you're just, you know, they're just memorizing the answers, blah, blah, blah. And I say, well, that may be true, but I point to some people that have gone on to get extra class licenses. And in fact, that's what spurred me to get an extra class license about 5 or 6 years ago. I had an advanced class license. I always said I wanted to be the last living advanced class licensee. But so many of my students had gone on and got extra class licenses, I got kind of shamed into doing it. So, and I'm proud of all these people. I'm proud of all these people that have gone on. And over the last 5 years, I've had probably 250. I'd have to really count. People go through these classes and get licenses, and now they're, you know, somebody was talking about being presidents of clubs and vice presidents, and you know, I have students that are participating in Skywarn and doing that. You know, they have extra class licenses. They come out to field day. Some of them even learn CW. But what I do is I tell them, I say, you know, we have the station at the museum. I'm down there almost every Saturday. I invite them all to come down and just play with the radios, talk about radio, and we do get some people to do that.
That was Dan Romanchik, KB6NU, a ham radio instructor who reports having achieved a high success rate in his one-day ham cram classes the past 5 years. You can download his teaching materials from his KB6NU.com website. The Rain Report is copyright 1990, 2013 Rain, all rights reserved. Now for Rain's founder producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 and 44 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.